You're listening to the weekly Parsha podcast with Ari Goldwag, recorded with Hashem's never-ending assistance in Ramat B'Shem Ish Israel, 5778, 2017. This week's Parsha is Parshas Vayeshev, and I'd like to share with you, actually, not exactly the same as we did last week, but a kind of approach, looking at the Medrash, trying to understand what it's talking about, and looking for the message, trying to understand what it's saying to us. And it's amazing when we read carefully with Chazal, what our sages teach us, when we read carefully the words that they use, everything is meduyik, everything is specifically and carefully chosen. So we need to understand every word. And there's some really interesting and deep ideas and connections that we can find if we have some information and we put the pieces together, connect the dots. So I'd like to do that a little bit with you today. In the Medrash, the Torah describes the situation of Yosef in our Parsha. This is the Parsha, one of my favorites in the Torah, the description of how Yosef and his brothers, the brothers were jealous of Yosef. They had a difficult time with the fact that he was the chosen one, that Yaakov showed him favoritism, gave him a ksenas apasim, a special coat. And in so doing, and through their jealousy, as a result of their jealousy, they ended up sending him down, selling him to the Ishmaelim, to the Ishmaelites, and they ended up, Yosef ended up down in Mitzrayim, and the whole story of the Jewish people's descent to Egypt begins. Now, in the story, I want to focus in at the very beginning of the story, when Yosef HaTzadik, when he's talking about his dreams, he's sharing them with his brothers, and the brothers are very upset, they're not happy. They're already jealous, and the dreams just made things worse. And in fact, Shimon and Levi say to each other, when they're about to sell, and they say, "Oh, look, here comes the dreamer." So the dreamers, the dreams were a point of contention with the brothers. But the Medrash gives us a few very interesting points, and we need to understand them, in regards to the dreams and the way that the dream is expressed. Certain small details within the dream, and the way that Yosef himself speaks out the dream when he tells it to his brothers. Okay, so I'd like to read to you from the Medrash. Vayachalom Yosef chalom vayomer lehem shemuna. Yosef had a dream, and he says to his brothers, "Listen, please." He says to them, the Mefarshim talk about, did Yosef realize that his brothers were jealous of him? Did he have a conception? Did he understand that there was an animosity? It would seem from the psukim that it was clear to him. It seems, it says, they couldn't speak to him. They felt like they couldn't talk to him. And clearly, if that's the case, and as actually the piece before, I'm not going to read it inside, but the piece before in the Medrash says that they were honest. They didn't interact with him in a positive way and pretend that they liked him. They were honest about their feelings. They couldn't speak to him peacefully. So Yosef certainly sensed, I don't think it required a great genius to realize that the brothers had animosity towards him. So he knew that. But when he said to them, Shimuna, he said to them, please listen to this dream. He was trying to win back their favor, as the Eitz Yosef explains. He was trying to say, listen, like a person who he was interacting with them, like a person who has friends, good friends, and he wants to share, or loved ones, who he wants to share his dream with, if he has a dream. So he said, Shimuna, please listen. Amar, kach yu anavim achichin eschem, Shimuna is asher Hashem oimer. That in the future time, the Medrash tells us that included in what Yosef said was the fact that in the future, so there would be Nevim, there would be prophets who would say to the Jewish people things that were unpleasant, would say things that they didn't want to hear, who would give them tochacha, who would give them rebuke in regards to those things that they were doing wrong. Okay? And they would speak with this language, Shimuna, please listen, please hear. Right? We find in the Psukim in Tanakh, in the prophets, it speaks, Shimu Devar Hashem, listen to the word of Hashem. Listen, listen. It's Hashem Aymer. Right? The verse says, the Pasuk in Micha, In Micah chapter 6 verse 1, Shimun es asher Hashem aymer. Verse uses the same exact language. Please listen to that which Hashem says. So Yosef was coming to them in a certain sense. We need to like what is the Medrash saying here? The Medrash is telling us that Yosef was saying to them, "I'm giving you tochacha." In a certain sense, he was saying, "You guys think one thing about me. You think that I'm, you know, this kid who it's not right. Our father is treating me differently. But understand, Shimuna, hear please." And he says it in a way which is loving. He says it in a way which is endearing and trying to bring them in. Please listen to what I'm saying. He wants them to understand that he has a certain level of prophecy. And he's coming with Teichach. He's coming to help them. He's not coming to hurt them. He's not coming to think that he's greater than them. That's not what he's coming to do. I want to also point out the language of Shimuna. Please listen. Why doesn't he just jump into it? I want to think about the concept of Shimuna, you know, the idea of hearing in regards to, in this context, and how it relates to the Teichacha, the rebuke. What's the idea of listen? Please listen. We'll come back to that point. The Medrash continues. So Yosef describes his dream, and he says that we were out in the field in my dream, and we were collecting these sheaves, ma'alumim alumim. So there's a few aspects here that he was saying to them. It's very interesting. Atem koinsin peris, ani koines peris. That the Medrash tells us the word me'almim alumim, we need to understand what does it mean. They were collecting sheaves. So he says that you guys and I were all collecting fruits. Interesting, the Medrash switches the concept to fruits. Shalachem rukuvim v'shali oimdim. Mine were fruits that were going to last, and yours were rotten. Okay, so the Eitz Yosef points out that in the future, when the dreams would be mekuyim, when they would be fulfilled, so it was going to be true that whatever Yosef would collect, all of the fruits or all of the grains that he would collect, so the verse tells us, I believe it's Beferish on the Pasuk, that that which he collected himself all lasted. There was nothing that went bad. There was nothing that turned rotten. As opposed to that which was collected and saved by others, it was ruined. So the Medrash is telling us that included in the dream itself was an aspect of the fact that they were going to collect, theirs, that which was theirs was going to rot, and that which was his was going to stand, was going to stay, was going to last. Okay, so that's the Medrash, as is explained by the Eitz Yosef. But what I want to point out here, interestingly, is that at the depth of the statement is also the fact that Yosef is saying there's something that you're doing. There's something there's something in the way that you are holding yourselves, in the way that you are doing things, that is rotting. There's something that's wrong with the way you're doing things. And there's something in what I do and what I am doing that stands, that lasts, that has kiyum, that is going to continue to exist. So that's encompassed or included in Yosef's statement. Okay? Hold on to that thought, because I'm going to show you that really this idea continues in the Medrash, even though it's at first glance you might not notice that this is a theme that's going on through the Medrash. The pasuk says, the verse says, that my sheaf, it stood up, and it was getting up, and it stood, it was yatsiv, it was stable. It was stable. So again, there's this something that's going on where Yosef is saying that there's something about me that's stable, something about you that's not as stable. Yours are, you know, going around and around, but there's something about me that's stable. Let's see. Rabbi Levi, Rabbi Acha. Rabbi Levi and Rabbi Acha each give an explanation of what this means. Rabbi Levi, Omar, Sidon Atem Lasois Alilim Ilmim, Lefnei Agolav Shal Yeravam, Velemor Ela Lehecha Yisrael. So there's, this is very interesting, and I actually spent a lot of time trying to unravel what this means here. But the Medrash is pointing out the word ma'almim alumim, which means that they were collecting sheaves. That the word, which means a sheave, also the root of it is aleph lamed mem, which is also the word for silence, or someone who can't speak. Someone who is mute is called an ilam. Okay? So the Medrash, according to Rabbi Levi is saying that there's something about the brothers that is going to be mute. Okay? They're going to have a mute aspect that's going to manifest at a later time. So Yosef says to them, look, this is how the commentators explain it, it's very, very interesting. Perhaps you have animosity toward me because in the future time, there is going to be an individual. His name is Yeravam ben Nevat. Yeravam ben Nevat was in the times of King Solomon's son. King Solomon's son was, Shlomo Melech's son was Rehavam. And at that time, so the Malchus, the kingship, the kingdom of the Jewish people was split in two. And the northern kingdom was the people of Israel, was the house of Israel, Beis Yisrael. There was Beis Yehuda, there was Beis Yisrael. So Yehuda and Binyamin was separated into one part of the Jewish people, the southern kingdom, which was headed by Rehavam, who was a grandson of King David. The northern kingdom split off, and Yeravam ben Nevat became the king over the northern kingdom. And Yeravam was from the tribe of, you guessed it, Yosef. Now what Yeravam did, as the Psukim describe in Melachim Aleph chapter 12, is that, 1 Kings chapter 12, is that Yeravam saw that if the Jewish people would go to the Beis HaMikdash, to the temple, in Judah's portion, so they would see that they would feel that who is the real king? Rehavam, the grandson of King David. Okay, so he was afraid that he would lose his malucha, he would lose his kingship, his kingdom, even though, interestingly, he was appointed by a true Navi, a true prophet of God. Nevertheless, he was afraid he would lose his kingdom. So, what did he do? He set up Avodah Zarah. First, it wasn't an Avodah Zarah. He claimed it wasn't going to be an idol. He set up these two agalim, two golden calves. He said, look, it wasn't the right time in the Midbar, in the wilderness, but now is the time. He set up a temple in Be'er Sheva, one in two different places, in two different locations. One in Dan, I believe it's, if I'm not mistaken. And so he created these temples originally for Hashem, but eventually it ended up being that it became an idolatrous temple. Now, Yosef was saying like this, perhaps you have animosity towards me because I'm going to have a great-grandson who is going to cause your great-grandchildren to serve idolatry, which is the Agalim, the Eglei Zahav, the golden calves of Yeravam. Says Yosef to them, I want you to understand, this is, by the way, the Pshat and the Medrash, according to the Etz Yosef, I'm going to offer a slightly different concept or another aspect or view of this Medrash. But the Etz Yosef says, Yosef was saying to them, don't get all upset at me because of that sin that's going to happen in the future, which you're aware of. You see that within me, perhaps. But I want you to remember, I want you to understand that your great-grandchildren are going to be the first ones, are going to set the precedent of the Eglei Zav, of the golden calf, which is going to happen in the wilderness. So it's not something that my great-grandson is going to initiate. It's something that your great-grandchildren are going to initiate. So, and interestingly, and this is the part we need to understand, because it's not really explained so much by the commentaries. I had to dig deep to find someone who talks about this point in the way that I was thinking about it, but I did find somebody. So he says that your grandchildren are going to create this Egel Hazav, this golden calf, so don't get upset at me for what my great-grandson is going to do. Now, when we read the language of the Medrash, it says, "Asidim atem lasis elidim ilmim," which means you are going to make, your grandchildren are going to make idols that are mute. Okay, so it grabs on that lashon of ma'almim alumim. You are going to have mute. Your grandchildren are going to create mute idols. So I was thinking, like, what is the mute? What is a mute idol? And the Etz Yosef does not explain that language. He just, you know, looks at the whole picture without looking at that specific word. But that specific word is actually key, because clearly that's the word from the pasuk, from the verse that the Medrash is playing with, so to speak, that it's darshaning from. So we need to know, what is the word ilmin? What is the mute? What is the idea of a mute idol? What does that mean? So, you know, it was, I remembered in my mind somewhere, you know, in my memory, that the agalim of the calves of Yeravam spoke. I don't remember where I saw it. I don't remember where I heard it. But I did a search. Actually, Google helped me out. It was a little bit difficult to actually find it. But I was able to. It says that Gehazi, who was the student of Elisha, he engraved in the mouths of the Agalim, of the calves of Yeravam, engraved in them the name of God, such that they started to speak. They would say, "Anoichi Hashem Elokecha, I am Hashem your God that took you out of Mitzrayim." So the Agalim, the calves of Yeravam, were able to talk. And that's how the Jewish people were tricked into serving that idolatry. It was because there was something about them that they were not mute. Okay? They were not mute. So if this is the pshat here, Yosef is saying to his brothers, your idols, the idols that you're going to make in the future, are going to be mute, as opposed to the idols that my great-grandson is going to make. It's going to be able to speak. What is Yosef saying here? It sounds very strange. What is the idea? Okay, so again, like we had last week, so we saw in the Medrash, sometimes the Medrash will say things that, or bring rayas that are unusual or strange, like we saw with the Midianite princess, the princess of Midian. She's called Achoisa. She's called the sister of her tribesmen, of the people of her nation, because of that thing that, we're talking about a funny thing there. We're talking about something very negative, but we're using it to bring out an idea, bring out a concept. And I think that the Medrash is doing a similar thing right here. And I think that what Yosef is trying, what the Medrash is putting into Yosef, or teaching us again, is that Yosef is saying there's something about the way that I do things that has kilum, that lasts longer, that has, it's stronger than the way that you do things. Right? So here it's in a negative context. Yosef is saying to them, when you, atema almim alumim, when you create even an avodah zarah, even the negative things that you do, when you do it wrong. You do it, they're mute. They're not able to speak. When my great-grandson will create an idol, he's going to do it right, so to speak. So to speak, pun not intended. He's going to do it right, that the idol will be able to speak. There's something about my koch, there's something about my ability, even when it goes into the klipa, even when it goes into the forces of evil, that it's still stronger than yours. It still works better, so to speak. Okay, so that's the thought that I have on this these lines here. Very interesting. Amar Rav Acha. And Rav Acha gives another explanation of what does it mean in this context, the concept of ilaim, of being mute. Amar Rav Acha, asidim atem lahalim alai dvarim lefnei aba loimer chaya ra'a chalasu. There's going to be another time in the future that you're going to be mute, that you're going to not speak, and you're going to cause a negative effect, because you're going to bring... Yosef was referring to something wrong that they're going to do, which is they're going to bring the cloak of Yosef dipped in blood. They're not going to say a word. And the result will be that Jacob is going to say, a wild animal has eaten my son, Yosef. So there's something negative about that mute aspect of themselves. Okay, so Yosef was bringing that out. Now, and here's the final part of the Medrash which I want to bring, which is really very, very interesting, and brings up a really difficult part of the story. Man kaimle, man kaimle. Pasuk says, "Vine kama ulomo siva gam nitzava." Yosef said that my sheaf got up and it stood firm. It stood firm. It was yatsiv. Okay, what was it, says the Medrash, that caused it to be able to stand up, to stand firm? Mashtikusa de ima kama. It's the quiet of my mother that caused it to stand. Now listen to this. This is amazing. The quiet of my mother. What happened? Yosef was telling them that there was something about my kama alumasi. What does my mute look like? And I think that this is a contrast. What does their mute look like? Their mute, their quietness looks like showing a garment which is full of blood and not saying anything and causing someone to believe that their son is dead. Okay? What does my quietness look like, says Yosef? Look at what my mother did, Rachel. Look at what my mother did. She was quiet. When Lavan took Leah, your mother, and brought her to marry our father Yaakov, my mother Rachel was quiet. Can you hear the depth of what he's saying? My mother was quiet. Her quietude was what brought you into existence. My mother's humility, her quiet, her elam, her mute, was not used to cause someone to think that someone was dead, their child was dead. My mother's mute was used to allow you guys to come into existence, allow Leah to marry Yaakov. Her quietude brought you into reality. Okay? So look at the difference. Look at the difference between my muteness, my quietude, my elam, and your elam. Mine has kium. And when we think about it, when we think about this story, you know, like, it's so difficult to understand. You know, as we mentioned last week, the brothers stand up for Dina. They stand up for her. She's been violated, and they run and they destroy a town for her. But they don't stand up for Yosef. They don't stand up for their brother Joseph. I mean, think about it. Joseph's mother passed away. He was a Yosem. He had lost his mother. He was a really, it's such a sad story. She died in childbirth. And that's his beloved mother. He lost her. Can't they have I don't want to come to say anything negative, but like, this is who he is, okay? Okay, he's saying things that make you uncomfortable. His father's doing things to make him feel special. Can we have a little rahmanis, a little bit of mercy, a little bit of compassion, a little understanding? Very challenging, very difficult to understand. His mother's quietude is what brought them into existence, right? But I want to point out that the quiet here, of a Yosef, he doesn't say, when he's yelling from the boar, he's saying, let me out. He doesn't say, hey, I'm the one, I'm the guy. He's not saying, I'm the guy. He's not coming to Engaiva. He's not coming with an ego to say this. He's trying to show them that there's something real about who I am. Now, it's not a mistake that Yaakov gave me the Ksenas HaPasim, this colored garment. It's not a mistake. Yosef is quiet in a certain sense. He's quiet later on in the story as well. When the brothers come in, he's quiet. And he doesn't remember their sin. He remembers the dreams, right? He remembers the dreams. He doesn't remember that they sold him, they threw him in the pit. They remember that, because for them, you know, they realize that that was a horrible thing. But he remembers the dreams. He remembers, and he's quiet. He's quiet there. He doesn't say who he is. He's quiet. He has that shtika, he has that quietude. And the result of the quiet, Rachel, there are those who say that Rachel never told Leah. She never knew that Rachel was supposed to be the right one, was supposed to be the wife of Yaakov. There are those who explain that. It's very, it's not the Pashup Shah. It doesn't sound like that's what's going on per se in the verses. But Leah, it seems, or for sure the children, perhaps, didn't know what had gone on, didn't know that Rachel was supposed to be the wife and not Leah. So Yosef is the one. Yosef is the guy who's supposed to belong to him, the malucha, the kingship, etc. But he's quiet. He's quiet. Rachel is quiet. And that quiet bears fruit later on. That quiet, that elam, that muteness bears fruit later on. Ultimately, Yosef is the one who becomes the king. Ultimately, Yosef is the one who rules over the Jewish people, has compassion on his brothers despite their lack of compassion on him. And they doubt it. After Yaakov Avinu dies, they think perhaps he's upset at them. It's not that way. They've thought throughout that he has negative intentions, but he doesn't. Yosef doesn't. He's quiet. He's quiet in the face of injustice. And despite that, what is the results? And that's what I want to bring out here. What are the results of the quiet? The results of the quiet are ultimately that good, that which is truly good, that which is meant to be, wins out. That which is supposed to be, that's the strong thing. That's that which stands in the end. Why does his sheaf stand up? Because it's called an elam. Me'almim alumasi, alumasi, my muteness, my quietness, that which I inherited from my mother, her quietness. And quietness is quiet, and it continues to be quiet. Right? It remains quiet until the end, right? But Tischak Leimacharon, at the last day, that's when there's a laugh. That's when the quietness, in the face of challenge, in the face of injustice, ultimately, the truth comes out. Ultimately, those who were quiet and stood and waited, the truth comes out. And that's what he's saying to them. Shalachem rukuvin shali imdim. Your fruits are rotten and mine are that which stand. Because there's something wrong with your approach. And my approach of quietness, of love, despite injustice, is what lasts. And that's also the pshat, I think. Shimuna es asher Hashem oimer. The way that the Nevi'im speak is, listen, hear, be quiet, listen, hear. Right? It takes time. It takes time to hear it. Like as we speak, the Lashon of Shimuna, please listen, is a request for quiet and listening. That humility that it takes to listen and to be quiet. And also the way that the words, when we put the words together, so it takes time. We don't understand the full effects of our sentence until we've listened to all of the words of the sentence. And then at the end, all the pieces come together. So there's a quiet and there's a patience, which is also implied in the concept of shtika, in the concept of quietude. So I want to bless you and ask you to bless me. Hashem should help us that we should learn the lessons of Yosef. We should understand what it means to be mute, what it means to be quiet. We should understand that the quietude, the humility, is that which ultimately stands. And ultimately, the fruits of Yosef, we will see ourselves very soon. We'll see the quiet. The Jewish people are the Yosef of the world. We stand by and we watch injustice, and ultimately, after many, many years of our being quiet and waiting, ultimately, Mashiach, Messiah will arrive. All of the nations of the world will continue to acknowledge that we are the chosen people of God. Thank you so much for listening. Have a wonderful Shabbos. This podcast was made possible through the gracious donations of listeners like you. For more podcasts like this, please visit www.arigoldwag.com or search on iTunes, Ari Goldwag.